You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Western governments and charitable organizations have sent trillions of dollars in aid money to Africa over the past 50 years, and yet extreme poverty continues to be a serious problem. A new documentary called Good Fortune looks at two multi-million-dollar aid projects in Kenya that, according to some locals, are actually making things much worse for the people they're intended to help. You can see it on PBS Tonight at 10 as part of the POV series, and I'm very pleased that it brings director and producer Landon Van Soest and editor and producer Jeremy Levine to our show today. Welcome.
Thanks.
Very much.
Landon, Kenya is not the most troubled African nation. What made you focus on it rather than Somalia, say, or Guinea-Bissau?
Well, that's true. I think that Kenya actually has a reputation of being a relatively stable country politically and economically. And for that reason, they have a tremendous amount of outside donor support. And it's really a hub of humanitarian aid. There's a number of NGOs that are there. So it really seemed like the natural place to look at these issues.
So, and you just thought because they had the projects that it might be a better place to look.
Yeah, I think so.
One of the projects that you track is a company called Dominion Farms. That's developing a rice farm in rural Kenya. Isn't that a good idea?
Well, I think in theory it sounds like a great idea. The area that he's come into in western Kenya around the Yala Swamp is on paper one of the poorest areas in the country. And he came in on a mission trip and said, you know, I need to do something to help them, and I'm going to provide jobs and build this massive rice farm and build up infrastructure in the
region.
When
you say he, you're talking about a man named Calvin Burgess.
Yes, yes.
Who says that he wants to make the local Kenyans more prosperous.
Yep. And so, again, in theory, it sounds like a great idea, but we follow Jackson, who his family has lived there for a number of years, and his farm and 500 of his neighbors are going to be flooded out of their land because of this massive reservoir that he's building to irrigate the rice farm.
So it's going to destroy other farmers there. Did they consult with the other farmers?
They did. I mean, they had some projects early on where they went in and tried to reach out to the community, but a lot of that communication was just really stifled, and it seemed like there was really a huge disconnect between the intentions and what the company was claiming to come in and do and the needs and the values of the local community. I think.
What role did the Kenyan government play in this project? Did they welcome it?
Yeah, absolutely. They had a tremendous amount of support locally. I think that was actually a big part of the issue, that the company was dealing primarily with local politicians and not dealing directly with the community themselves. But the land that Dominion is on was actually originally a government development project, and it was an area that had been earmarked for development by the government.
The reason I ask is the local farmers claim that Dominion blocked their water supply, poisoned the river, burned the growth that their livestock needed to live on and more. And I was wondering if a company tried to do this sort of thing in the United States, I suspect farmers would get a little more success when they complained to local authorities.
Yeah, I would hope so. And I think that's a big problem of individuals and companies and organizations coming into other countries. And the laws are a bit less clear, you know, even though it's an American company, it's operating in Kenya. So it becomes a lot more complicated. But, you know, one thing that was really surprising and really great to see was that Jackson and his neighbors, they don't just sit back and let this happen to them. They really take an active role in fighting and doing a lot of the things that we would do, writing letters, petitioning the government. And, you know, it was just really great to see that.
And it should be pointed out that Dominion is not an NGO. I would assume that an NGO project or a UN project would be more carefully thought out than this.
Yeah, no, they're very upfront about the fact that they are there to make a profit, but they see tremendous benefit to the area by doing so.
I think. Well, Burgess seems to be arguing that he's doing God's work. So how much are his opinions based on business concerns and how much are on real concerns about the welfare of these people?
Well, that's a good question, and it's sort of hard to say exactly where his motivations lie. Again, you know, he's upfront about the fact that he's trying to make a profit, and, you know, he can talk about the way that he expects that to sort of trickle down, which, you know, the whole idea of trickle-down economics and the idea of direct foreign investment are certainly not unpopular ideas. They're the things that come about all over Africa and all over the world, but I think there's very few examples of it actually having a positive impact.
At one point in the film, Calvin Burgess remarks that the people in the area might need to switch their livelihoods from farming and raising cattle, which their families have done for generations, to fishing. We can only hope that nobody's doing any deep water drilling in the area. But
I think that was actually Graham Vetch, who's the country director. Oh. But yeah, certainly the point's still valid.
You know, the disconnect between, you know, the intentions and what's actually happening on the ground.
A second project your film tracks is an upgrade of the notorious Nairobi slum called Kibera. We've talked about that on the show recently with some filmmakers who actually lived there. You follow Silva, a midwife who's moved there from her village and is making good living and sending her kids to good schools. Did you see much of that kind of resourcefulness in Kibera?
Oh, there's a tremendous amount. I mean, it's such a vibrant community, and there's so much of a local economy there. I mean, there's bustling markets all over. You know, when you walk into Kibera, it's obviously a bit of a shocking image, and it's sort of an iconic image of poverty with mud shacks and kind of open sewer lines and all of that. But really,
people going to outhouses, sometimes far from their homes.
Well, if there's outhouses, often it's plastic bags.
There's more. It's been said that there's more churches than there are toilets in Kibera. So, just a startling statistic there.
At one point, Silva's husband points out that frequently aid doesn't reach the people it's meant to help. What kind of aid are we talking about here?
Well, I think, you know, the film, obviously there's a lot of different types of aid, and there are so many different examples of, you know, when we talk about Haiti or we talk about a famine or any kind of natural disaster, you know, we can sort of trace that aid money more directly. But these are really, you know, economic development projects. They're projects that are really trying to fundamentally change the livelihoods of people. And in this case, you know, the United Nations came in. They had the backing of the World Bank through a program called the Cities Alliance to do this upgrading program. But they're doing it in partnership with the Kenyan government. And I think that there was a lot of misinformation about, you know, who had the authority to make decisions and how exactly, you know, that money was being spent and who was driving the project. So there were, you know, I think there was a bit of infighting behind closed doors about how exactly the project was going to be administered, and the way that that trickled down and the information that actually got out into the community was, you know, unclear at best.
Well, Silva's husband seems to put his faith in a new administration getting elected. But isn't corrupt government what got the people into this trouble in the first place?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the most positive things that I experienced in Kenya was just seeing how active people are in their civil society. You know, people are so attuned to the political climate and what's happening very locally within their communities. I think the election that we touch on at the end of the film had something like 85% or 90% voter turnout, you know, which is obviously
and then a disputed result.
And a disputed result. So, I mean, there was so much faith, and people are so hopeful that democracy can bring change. It really wasn't, you know, having been there and having lived with that, it wasn't surprising to see the, you know, the reactions once it seemed like that structure fell apart.
Have you seen any aid organizations in your travels that are doing it right?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, in the two examples in our film, which, you know, I think it's interesting to point out that the Dominion Farms is kind of a conservative, you know, trickle-down business model, and the United Nations more of a liberal, charitable model. But in both cases, they're being imposed on the community. And I think that's a fundamental problem. And so that's why in both cases, Jackson and Silva are losing their homes. But, you know, there's tremendous amount of good work that's being done. And I think change really needs to come from the grassroots. So there's organizations that really work to involve the community and to work with the community to bring about change. And it's a lot slower and it's a lot more difficult, but I think it's the way to do it. We actually have been working on a series of short films called Strides in Development, where we ask some of the development experts what are the positive examples that are out there. And that's on our website, goodfortunefilm.com.
Also on the POV website, and they've done a number of other resources that can really help to put the film in context.
Well, you're suggesting that too much of this is are projects that are imposed from outside without consulting with the people. Mm-hmm. I recently saw a film about water pumps that have been brought to various parts of Africa, water pumps where the kids would play and water would be pumped, and it got a lot of people excited. And they brought a lot of money to the organization that was building the pumps. and they all break down. And actually, they've caused more trouble. The people who were relying on them now no longer have their local pumps and have to travel far distances to get their water.
There's so many stories like that. I know I heard a story about people coming in and drilling boreholes for water pumps. And they just couldn't find out why people wouldn't use them. And they kind of found out once they spent a bit of time in the community that it was actually a, you know, it was a social activity for the women to go off to the river, and they would spend time together and socialize when they were going down to get water. So they didn't appreciate having the pump in the middle of the village. But I think the bottom line for me is that, you know, I think when we go into an area like this, we want change to happen so fast. And, you know, people have talked about sort of trying to replicate the Marshall Plan in Africa and really trying to bring about this incredibly rapid social change. But I think any organization that really strikes at the grassroots level, that really works, you know, hand in hand with community members to, you know, uplift their lives in ways that they can appreciate, in ways that they have devised, you know, whether it's helping them with a different variety of corn, or it's giving them a, you know, a cow that can yield higher volumes of milk, or very small measures like that can really have a profound impact, you know, directly on their lives and really kind of spread throughout the communities and throughout the areas.
The film spans the time in late 2008 when there were terrible post-election acts of violence in Kenya. How did that tie in with the issues in your film?
Sure. As you mentioned, Silva and her husband put a lot of faith in, you know, if we can bring in a new government, then I think this project's going to work out. I think we're going to be able to live in these new houses that they're building for us. And because there was such intense faith in this election, I think it was really disheartening to see the violence and the corruption and the aftermath of it, where, you know, a lot of international agencies said there was corruption and that the results were rigged. So a lot of violence broke out. And it was, you know, afterwards we talked to Silva and she said, I don't think I can ever vote again if this is the consequence. And that was just really, really sad to see.
They just resigned to the fact that no matter what happens, they're going to wind up with this kind of corrupt government that Kenya's pretty much had since it gained independence, although it became institutionalized with Daniel Arap Moi.
Yeah, and obviously there was so much hope when Kibaki was elected and Moi was finally out of power. And I think that there's been a tremendous amount of frustration that things haven't changed as much as people had hoped that they would. The power sharing that was brokered after the election, you know, I think a lot of people were very frustrated with that and felt that things wouldn't move forward. But I think, you know, just the role of politics is so undeniable when you talk about these development issues, and certainly when you're talking about, you know, massive amounts of foreign aid dollars coming in. I was able to go back to Kenya and a little bit through Uganda just a few weeks ago to do some follow-up work. And it just happened to coincide with a trip by Joe Biden was there, and he was speaking, and it was just so obvious in the speeches that he gave and the way that he spoke. You know, it was kind of, you know, sort of a soft power move to say, you know, if you want these aid dollars to continue flowing in, if you want our continued support, you know, then you need to do X, Y, and Z. And it's sort of, you know, looking at this outside influence at so many different levels.
Well, can you really say to people, we'll give you money if you stop being corrupt? Is this situation unique to Kenya? Might we find similar situations throughout the less developed countries of the world?
Absolutely. I think the stories in this film and the themes are really universal, and they, you know, they happen all around the world. They happened here in New York, Atlantic Yards, you know, they've happened in the past with where Central Park was built. I think all of these stories of progress, but in the path of progress, displacement of a large number of people, it's just kind of a timeless story.
So I'm just going to give up, right?
No, I think that, you know, aid has a really valuable role to play. And I think when we started working on this film, it's been 4 or 5 years, but the Live 8 concerts were in full swing, and the One campaign was really bringing a lot of public awareness and celebrity endorsements. And the G8 summit in Glen Eagles had doubled aid. And I think we were really feeling like, you know, there was this tremendous wave of enthusiasm and there was so much potential to do great things. But there was so little conversation about how those aid dollars were actually being spent. And I think having spent some time in Africa prior to that, and knowing that not all aid and not all development is created equal, and that, you know, very often the impact is ineffective or detrimental, that it really seemed like a really valuable conversation that we need to have.
And sometimes good intentions can still have bad results. In Haiti, a lot of rice came into the country to feed people who really needed to be fed. But it pretty much destroyed a whole industry of selling rice. Mm-hmm. And now the people who were involved in bringing the rice in and then selling to local entrepreneurs who then sold it to women who sold small bags in the marketplace, that's all been pretty much destroyed. And now people expect to get their rice free.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, we're following Haiti closely just because it'll be incredibly interesting to see how it plays out there. But I think already we're seeing examples of how not to do it. And this idea, once again, where, you know, it probably seems like a good idea to give this out. But if you're not working closely with the community, who can say, well, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. We're going to run into these unintended consequences. So, again, we need to involve the people in all of these decisions.
Good Fortune is being shown tonight as part of the POV documentary series on PBS, 10 o'clock tonight on Channel 13.
Mm-hmm.
And my great thanks to both of you for being with us, Landon Van Soest and Jeremy Levine.
Thank you
very much.